So, Amy, I saw an interesting post on Facebook the other day. It said, advice is only guaranteed to be well received when it's asked for. The end.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh. Who would post something as sassy as that?
Well, it has your picture by it.
Oh, yeah. I remember that day.
What was going on, girlfriend?
Well, it was so funny because you texted me and you were like, is there a story behind this? I was like, there might be. Okay, so I have publicly spoken against vague booking. I hate it. And I did it.
There, you did it. Yes.
I couldn't take it, though. I had to vent someplace. I cannot tell you the amount of unsolicited advice from virtual strangers that I had that morning, and I had had it up to here. And so I just had to post and get a little love from my people.
Well, I was right there with you. I totally agreed with you. And you did get me thinking about how much better I've gotten at asking for help and feedback and input. But then I realized I hate the uninvited input as much as you do. I mean, it just makes me see red. It feels intrusive. It even feels kind of controlling. But then I got to wondering, well, so does that make me a control freak that I want to control other people and like I only want their input if I've asked for it? What do you think? Is that controlling?
Well, no.
Oh, good. Thank you for agreeing with me. I feel so much better now.
However, maybe my reaction has something to do with a need for a sense of control myself. So one of our listeners had a similar reaction. She said, I equate getting things done and making people happy with success and with my worth as a woman. It also gives me a sense of control, which tricks me into thinking I'm self-sufficient, although that's the farthest from the truth.
A sense of control. I so resonate with that.
Why? Oh, why? Does this have to be a constant theme of this podcast and, well, my life?
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking to Jennifer Dukes Lee, author of It's All Under Control. Jennifer is a big fan of dark chocolate emojis, 80s music, bright lipstick, and Netflix binges. She and her husband are raising crops, pigs, a herd of cats, and two beautiful humans on the Lee family farm in Iowa. Jennifer is also the author of two other books we love, Love Idol and The Happiness Dare.
Welcome back to Grit and Grace, Jennifer. I like to tell people that you are the perfect combination of a friend who makes me feel normal and a mentor who challenges me to change. And I just want to say I really, really appreciate you writing a whole book just for Amy.
I know. Tyndale is going to be really disappointed in sales because no one but Amy and I have control issues.
Well, I might buy 10. So it's okay. So, Jennifer, tell us, besides me, what kind of woman did you write It's All Under Control for?
Well, I also wrote it for me, so we could be in the club together. I really happened upon this topic, even though it's something I've struggled with my whole life, when I was working at a retreat. It was just a very intimate retreat. And in talking with so many women, I realized how many of them were dealing with and admitting that they dealt with issues of control. And I began to look at that woman and realize that the kind of woman this book is for and the kind of woman that I am is a woman that others count on. I kind of subscribe to the idea of I'm capable, therefore I should. And so I say yes to all kinds of things. And I think that the woman who picks up this book will resonate with the saying that I'm sure you both have heard, if you want something done, ask a busy woman to do it. I'd say that a lot of the people who will pick up this book probably would describe themselves as achievers. In high school, they were probably the group project leader. But then as I began to dig deeper, I realized it's not just for achievers. It's really for all women because I think this is a book for women who are trying. We're women who are trying to hold it together for the sake of our family, trying to give our best to our churches and our jobs. We're trying to be there emotionally and physically for the people that we love. We're trying to help our grown-up kids make good choices, and then we're trying not to feel hurt when they tell us, you're not helping, Mom, you're meddling. So really, it's for women who are trying to stay on top of it all. But sometimes life actually feels super out of control. And these women can't control the big things in life always. And so maybe they're trying to control the little things, like what they put in their mouths, how many steps, which direction the vacuum lines go, or whatever.
Okay, all right, this is getting way too personal, Jennifer.
It's really for everybody. It's not just for me and Amy. I think we all have this little bit of an inner control freak, even though we really back away from that description. But I think that a lot of us, I mean, it's just, that's the way we've always been since the garden, this feeling that we want to control things, that we want to be God, that we want to take things into our own hands, that we want to fix and manage outcomes. So that's who it's for.
Well, early in the book, you say that you had built your image as the helper, not the helped. And you say that like it's a bad thing. So I want to know, what's the problem with always being the helper, Jennifer?
Well, I'll give you two reasons or examples why. And one of them is about over-helping and how it can hurt. And then the second is what happens when we never allow ourselves to be helped, to allow ourselves this opportunity for others to help us. And so first, this idea of over-helping. I know, or maybe you know, or maybe you are the mom who makes phone calls to the college professor on behalf of the child. A call that a child is perhaps capable of making, seeing how they're an adult now, right? That's an example of over-helping. Now, my kids aren't at that age in life yet. I have a high school and a junior high school student, but there are still situations where I want to rescue and help my girls, where I want to fix things for them, you know, something that's going on with friends or something that's going on with a difficult teacher or difficult situations. But when I stop helping and stop treating my daughters like infants, I allow them to grow into the beautiful, responsible women that they were made by God to be. And if I'm always helping or over-helping, they will never learn the important lessons from, you know, failing from time to time. And so that's one, is this over-helping. And then the second is this idea that we are the helpers and never the helped. And when we are doing that, we are denying the opportunity for others to be Christ to us. You know, think about the time that you've helped others in the sort of the way it strengthened your bond of friendship or love with the person that you helped. And in the same way, other people want the experience and the blessing of helping you. And if we never ask for help, we are denying others that opportunity, denying them to really be an important part of our lives. We're denying them the opportunity to help lighten a burden, to offer comfort when we're in need. And I think it's that we think it's the Christian thing to do, to help and serve and be there for others, and it certainly is. But guess what? It's also the Christian thing to ask for help. Even Jesus asked for help, which I think is so remarkable. The Samaritan woman, what did he do at the well? What did he ask the woman for? Can you give me a drink of water? You know, he's got 5,000 people on a hillside. And what does he ask his disciples to do? Basically, help me prepare this meal for all these people. He's taken his cross to Calvary, and he didn't ask for help, but he accepted the help of Simon, right? He accepted that help, and he could have snapped his fingers and just drifted his cross up there. We know it. He's fully human, but he's also fully divine. And I look at that picture of Simon carrying the cross of Jesus, and I have to ask myself, why do I think I can carry my own crosses on my own? There is a great lesson for me in asking for help. I have a very difficult time with it. I twisted my ankle really badly several years ago, and a woman wanted to come here. She came with a wheelchair because she wanted to take me to the doctor to make sure I hadn't broken my ankle. I didn't want to get in the wheelchair, and I didn't want her help. And it's just an example of how pride just gets in the way. And I really denied her the opportunity to be a blessing in my life. So over helping and not letting others help us are are two big problems for those of us who want to have everything under control.
All right. So I took some notes for our conversation, Amy. I just had a huge aha. I will save it for a week from now. Maybe.
Just saying.
Maybe I was feeling a little overly defensive and in denial. Okay, Jennifer, you throughout the book, you share strategies for how to crack the control code. So is it controlling of me to want to know what the control code is? And why do we need to crack it?
I created the control code when I was writing this book because I needed a way to understand why we do what we do, because that's what we do, right? We got to understand it all as control freaks. But really, I wanted to figure out how to stop it. In this control code, I identified what our core motivations are. And then I'm working to help women replace those old systems with a healthier way of living. So I've done all of these control code exercises. They're really just exercises and assessments. And I've done them all in my own journey toward releasing control and giving it over to God. So if you were to have a definition for a control code, it's a system of ideas and rules and behaviors that we have set up for ourselves in order to keep our lives in order. And so to crack it, we take a brutally honest assessment of our lives. And I have this done chapter by chapter, step by step, and also just taking moments to reflect on where we fall on what I call the control code continuum. And it helps you look at your behaviors and how you're feeling and what's going on in your life, and lets you know if you're in a place of a healthy state of control or unhealthy, or like really need counseling or that kind of help. And so these kinds of exercises crack the control code. And the goal here is to become more spiritually mature. We can't function as if our spiritual maturity is sort of programmed in. We wouldn't leave our jobs to chance. We wouldn't leave our finances unplanned. We wouldn't just let our kids do whatever. You know, that's not our style for the people that are picking up this book. But oftentimes we have no strategy for what it really looks like to follow hard after Jesus and to be a disciple of him. And so what happens is we've got all these plates spinning in the air, and the one plate that keeps dropping is our relationship with Jesus. So I feel like in cracking the control code, we can be more of the women that God created us to be.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, you asked the question, how did we get here? And here is running on empty, feeling overcommitted, believing that it's all up to me. So how did those of us, hear that, Amy, us, who are control freaks, how did we get here? And my real question is, am I, as I have secretly feared, just a self-centered narcissist?
It's such a good question. And I think it's the reason that a lot of us don't want to self-identify as a control freak or having control issues, because we all know those dominating personalities in our life who've been, you know, a self-centered narcissist for real. The kind of controllers who try to dominate people and sort of pass it off as caring. So this book isn't really for them. They need a whole nother kind of book, a whole nother kind of help, right? And who we are really is operating out of a place of either love or fear. Crazy enough, they're opposites, but they're both key motivators in what we're doing. We love our people so much, whether that's our customers or our kids or our spouses. So we want to do what we can to fix things, to make things right, and to manage outcomes. And we do it out of love. We think this is helping. And then we are also operating at the same time out of fear, because we're afraid of what will happen if we don't. In both cases, of course, we end up thinking that it's all on us. And it's like saying, I know more than God what is good for my life and what is good for the people I love. Besides, I'm doing this out of love, and so it's got to be good, right? And so I think it's important to take a minute to step back and look at our motives and not beat ourselves up, because there's a lot of good that comes out of that same place. But we just got to figure out where that line is that we cross over and we get into our shadow side. So we need achievers. Sherry and I have talked about this before. I even quote her in the Bible study portion of my book about how we need people that are kind of control freaks in operating rooms. And Sherry, tell your listeners what you said. I don't know if you remember this. You said that records need to be coded correctly.
I used to work in the clinical lab at a hospital, and surgeons do need that checklist to make sure they don't leave something inside of a patient.
Right. And so what you had told me is the problem is when I apply that same level of control mm-hmm. to getting the right notes at karaoke. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so brilliant. And that's the line, right? It's figuring out what that is. When does it really matter? When does our controlling cross the line into unhealthy behaviors? But I really took a lot of time in the book, and I take a lot of time when I'm talking to women, for them not to be too hard on themselves about this, that underneath a lot of this really is love.
Well, and I love that you're saying don't be so hard on yourself. But in the book, you dive headfirst into some hard questions that we have to ask ourselves. So unpack this one for us. Have I accidentally made myself into a little savior for those I love?
Right. So after we treat ourselves gently, we finally got to get into the hard questions, right? So I think what that means to me is that we often think we know more than God what is good for our lives. One of the most convicting verses to me that I underlined years ago in my Bible comes from the first chapter of John. People are asking John the Baptist in that chapter who he is, and he continually tells them who he's not. That's the first thing he does is, here's who I'm not. They're like, are you Elijah? He's like, no, I'm not. Are you a prophet? No, I'm not. And the thing that really gets me is he says, I am not the Christ. And for me, it's become sort of a mantra. I want that to be true in my life, that I would let Christ be Christ. I am not the Christ. I think we're all going to get to heaven someday and find out that God actually knew what he was doing. And he didn't need our help or advice.
When you put it that way.
Awesome. A quote from the book, you say, our robust inner control freaks will feel the external pressure to say yes, because we don't want to disappoint anyone and we don't want to be called lazy. Oh, my gracious. So what advice do you have for our listeners and me who are saying she's talking about me right now?
Oh, I've got so many great things to say. And I actually want to invite you and your listeners into something I call the Busy to Best Challenge. It's a challenge that women nationwide are taking with me starting next week, September 24th. And we will be dealing with that issue exactly. During that challenge, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about why our plates are so full and why when people ask us, how are you? Our answer is habitually, I'm crazy busy. And we'll really dig at the motivations underneath that. But even if you never took the challenge, I would offer you a bit of advice. And I have lots of steps in the book that deal with that. But the biggest piece of advice I think I have for people in that situation is to face this fact that you will disappoint people. You will learn to say no. You will learn to get some things off your plate, and you will disappoint people because people have counted on you again and again. And I think the great comfort I have as I have begun to disappoint people more often is to know that even Jesus disappointed people. There's a story in Mark. He took off from Simon's house and he's out praying, and Simon and some people come after him and they're like, everybody's looking for you. And I feel that way a lot of times. Everybody's looking for you. But Jesus doesn't go back to that village and meet all of those people's needs that day. He went somewhere else that God called him to. And there's no doubt that he disappointed people that day. We know that Jesus disappointed religious leaders because of who he chose to spend time with. We know that he disappointed people when he was late for a funeral. Lazarus was sick. They called for him. He didn't get there in time. But yet he did. Like, Jesus being late is like right on time. We are going to be in this state of disappointing people when we start to make changes in our lives. But there's a different kind of freedom that comes in knowing that we're doing what God has called us to do, that we are leaving the village where some people want us to be because God is calling us to do work somewhere else. So, you know, I think maybe a step that somebody could take if they're looking for a practical way to do that is to make a list of what your core boundaries are. Like, where do you draw the line? So maybe an example of a core boundary is, I will only serve on one committee a year. so that when somebody asks you, hey, you know, you would be perfect for this committee, you wouldn't say, oh, I don't think I can this time. You would say, I don't. So you replace I can't with I don't. It has a lot more authority and resolution. Like, I don't serve on more than one committee a year. End of story. And you may disappoint people, but you've set core boundaries for yourself to live a healthier life.
That is really powerful.
So Jennifer, you've identified three categories of people who want to keep things under control: the drivers, the devoters, and the darlings. So tell us about each one of those and make sure you tell us which one we should be.
Well, probably the truth is at some time or another, we've been all three. So they're all just wonderful types. Just like any personality types, they all have their benefits, and they also all have drawbacks and sort of a shadow side. The drivers are very decisive people. They're confident, efficient, maintain external order, the things around them. And so we love drivers in our lives because, like, in the event of an apocalypse, they're the ones with stocked cellars and like 2 years worth of bottled water down there. They have everything in their purse that you could, you know, I need a Tide stick. You got one? Yeah, I got one. But she's got a shadow side too. And that shadow side is being a workaholic, unrealistic goals, maybe high expectations on everyone else, the kind of high expectations that she has for herself. So that's the driver. And then there's the devoter. Devoters are really energized by a genuine concern and love for the people around her. You probably would describe her as caring and generous. And we love this woman because she is the one who will drive us to the airport at 4 or 5 a.m., right? They just want to be there for us. But she's got a shadow side too, and she really struggles with constantly thinking that she has to be the helper and not the helped. And then we have the darlings. And, you know, the drivers and devoters are more motivated by external control. I would say that the darlings are more motivated by internal control. Like, if she wants to control anything, it's going to be herself. She wants to be the best version of herself. She is probably someone who's really good at a lot of things. She pursues her goals, very involved in self-improvement. But her shadow side, perfectionist, people pleaser. If people say to you often, you are so hard on yourself, there's a good chance that you're a darling. So those are the three types. And I do have a little quiz. It's a fun quiz. It's not like this big, extensive, psychologically researched quiz, but it's a fun quiz on my website.
All right. We will take the quiz between this week and next week because Amy, Carol, and I even know our Disney princesses. That's how much we love a good quiz.
Excellent.
Oh, this is so good, Jennifer. All right. In your final chapter, you say, I learned that I wasn't a woman to be fixed. And this is such good news for those of us who've ever felt like we were just plain defective. So if we're not women who need to be fixed, then what are we?
I think we're women who need to see that the gifts that we have can be rechanneled. I think the worst thing that could happen is if someone read this book and they just throw their hands in the air and said, fine, I'm done. I'm done doing all these things. That's just not fair to God's creative genius in you. We are not called to shrink. We are called to shine. So my goal with this was to help women to let go of the things that they were not supposed to hang on to hang on to the things that they are with great strength, with God's strength within them, and to have this ability finally, once and for all, to tell the difference. I don't want capable people to stop being capable. We need capable people to make sure that there aren't surgical instruments left inside of human bodies. We need people in those operating rooms to control all the bleeding. We need achievers, you know, running podcasts like you're doing, to write books, to be teachers, to be CEOs and CFOs. We need strong women. But I think what I wanted to do with this book and what I want to do with this message is help women figure out what happens when we are under stress and our shadow side emerges and how we can end up hurting ourselves and hurting the people around us and not letting them grow into the people that God created them to be. And also just figuring out how to get reconnected to that source and how to be a partner with God and not calling all the shots, but being a part of the work that God is already doing. That's what I want, and that's what I hope that my readers will encounter as well.
So as we wrap up, Jennifer, what closing words of encouragement do you have for us and for our listeners?
You know, I think that somebody might be tempted to say, well, Jennifer's really saying to just let go and let God. But I actually think that is really bad advice. Because the truth is, and I hope this is an encouragement, because let go and let God is actually unreasonable sometimes. We can't leave it all behind. We can't just say, forget it, throw our hands up in the air and spend the rest of our lives on a lake, on a floaty. And we actually have work to do. You know, I think sometimes let go and let God is this cop-out, this thing that just lets us off the hook so that we can just not have to deal with hard things. God is going to ask you to let go of some things that are really hard to let go of. But you know what else he's going to do? He's going to ask you to hang on tighter than ever before. And I hope that he will show us the difference in our daily lives. And I would leave listeners with Hebrews 12:1. And I feel like it gives us a really clear picture of what that looks like. It says, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race God set before us. Let us strip off every weight that slows us down, whether that's our sin, our pride, our false sense of control, our need for approval, our badge of busyness, our belief that it's all in our hands. And then when we let go of all that stuff, then we can rise up with endurance to run the race God has set before us. It doesn't mean we run off the track. It doesn't mean we stop running. It means we run the race with perseverance that God has set for us.
Head on over to gritngracegirls.com/episode119.
There you'll find this week's transcript, the Digging Deeper download, our Bible verse art, and directions on how to enter to win this week's giveaway of It's All Under Control.
Come join our Facebook page and group where we'll continue this discussion of It's All Under Control. Just go to Facebook and search for Grit and Grace Girls.
Join us next week when we'll be processing together what we learned from Jennifer.
For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.
I think it must be your internet though, Sherry, because you still look pixelated to
really?
Me. Yeah.
That's so strange because I look all right to me. And you look pretty good, but that doesn't... Oh, I mean, I don't... I mean, as far as pixelation, you look lovely.
So. You look all right.